The Environment, Economic Development, and Agricultural Division for Wednesday, February 27th, 2013 will come to order. We have a number of bonding bills on the agenda for today, so let's get started right away. Senator Goodwin with Senate File 24, first on the agenda. Senator Goodwin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We're here with Senate File 24, which is a project in Springbrook Nature Center. Springbrook is in the city of Fridley. It's a real regional and important project. It has environmental impacts. I want to just give you a list of things here. I've got three people here with me to testify about Springbrook. This is a bill that's passed legislature three times in the past and went to the governor's office, and a former governor vetoed it out. But we know it's a great project. It's time to get this thing going, and it's a real educational tool for our district as well as many others. So I think what I'm going to do is, this is the one I wanted. Thank you. It's 127 acres of natural wetlands, prairie, oak, savanna, and aspen forest, with more than 200,000 visits each year from more than 300 Minnesota communities, all 50 states and over 60 foreign countries. Springbrook preserves and protects a major watershed area serving the Mississippi River that provides the uptakes for Minneapolis and St. Paul water systems. And it also serves as an invaluable educational resource, hosting schools and other groups for more than 35 communities to provide environmental programming, wilderness tours, and exhibits. Over 13,000 students participated in our science curriculum in 2012. It's designated as an important birding area in Minnesota by the National Audubon Society. It attracts hundreds of bird watchers and researchers. It's home to over 2,000 species of plants and animals and provides exposure to natural environment for youth development, critical for emotional, cognitive, and spiritual development. This is a project that I'm going to have them explain exactly what they want to do with this money. It's a $5 million request, and I think we'll start with the mayor. What's your name again?
Scott. I want to introduce myself, Senator.
They're a good one. That memory thing gets worse as you get older, too. So
he's got four other things doing today, so I think she's thinking of the other thing.
So here's how we'll do this. You don't say anybody's name. We'll just let them say their names, okay? All right, Mayor, go ahead. Mayor, say your name for the record, please. And do we have a quorum? I think we have a quorum. A quorum is present. Okay. Go ahead, Mayor.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Scott Lund, Fridley Mayor, friendly Fridley. We're here today to
Does it say that on the sign?
Pardon me?
Does it say that on the sign when you drive into town?
We do.
Yeah, okay. All right, good.
And we also have a welcome to Friendly Fridley sign. So.
Okay.
We're up in the northern, more pristine sections of the metro area, I take it. So. Here today to tell you that I and our city council and the all-volunteer Springbrook Nature Center Foundation members who are present also in this room, there is a lot of broad-based support for the improvements at Springbrook Nature Center in an otherwise very urban setting. It is a crowning jewel for the northern suburbs that we maintain, and we're happy to do so for all the hundreds of programs that occur there, educational, scientific programming that happens at Springbrook Nature Center. And we find that the ever-increasing usage is detrimental to the natural habitat, wildlife, and the vegetation there, and it needs to be better managed. I use the analogy frequently about Como Park. Everybody knows of Como Park, literally in this room. It's a city park, but it has much greater reach or interest, a regional interest at the very least. And Springbrook has similarities. It is a city park, but we have many thousands of visitors, so it has regional significance. We have many programs that they'll speak about that reach way beyond the boundaries of the city of Fridley. We're happy to have it. It is a an asset to our community. It's an, also an asset to a much larger audience. So with that, I'd like to have our foundation chair speak briefly about that, and then our director, who has been there for 35 years and has recently given us his resignation for retirement, and we're sorry to see him leaving soon. And we'd certainly like to have this thing going forward this year, if at all possible, to recognize Sia's 35 years of commitment to that nature center. With that, Malcolm Mitchell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Malcolm Mitchell. I'm the chair of what's called the Springbrook Nature Center Foundation. We are a separate 501c3 organization, a Friends of Springbrook-type organization. Our commitment is very deep and hard to this project. It is one that we have helped be part of building over the last several years in defining and designing. What we would like to say is that the project is a total of $6.9 million. We're asking you as the legislature to appropriate $5 million. We as the foundation board, as the nonprofit volunteer organization, will commit to and have committed to raising the 1.9 or about 25% of the project. At the same time, we've been moving ahead over the last several years to try to do that local match. That local match is something that continues to build. We were successful this year of receiving and capturing in-kind contribution as well as cash to build the berm, which is the first element of the project along 85th Avenue as a safety barrier, as a sound and noise and sound barrier, and a visual barrier from the busy Highway 85.
Is that part of the 1.9?
Yeah, that is part of the 1.9, yes.
Okay.
So altogether we've raised $450,000, and we will continue to work on that as we move forward, hopefully with the $5 million from the from your office. Okay. I'll turn it back to Sia so we can move forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Sia St. Clair. I'm the director of Springbrook Nature Center for a bit yet, and wanted to just bring you up to date. We've got some our human holders of the signs here that are going to be showing you a little bit about this rather than doing our PowerPoint, which we've done in the past. Springbrook Nature Center is the largest natural area park as you come north out of Minneapolis. It's a very diverse native habitat with native prairie, native woodlands, and a significant amount of wetlands. It has a large watershed that goes right straight into the Mississippi, just about a half mile south of the Nature Center, where it is immediately upstream from the St. Paul and Minneapolis water intakes. We've done a lot of work with the state in trying to make sure our wetlands are functioning wetlands for all the upstream water that comes down to keep it safe so that as St. Paul and Minneapolis are taking it in, that it's good water. We have diverse habitat and a lot of wildlife, and the combination of those things attract a lot of people. If you look at our growth curve, and I'm not doing the PowerPoint, so I don't have that slide here, but it's on a straight line, just going right up. And has been continuously doing that to the point where we now have 200,000 visits a year.
Is that because Fridley is friendly?
That means we're friendly, but it also means Springbrook especially is extremely accessible. And that's one of the reasons we have so many visits, in addition to the fact that there's so much wildlife there. We have 8 entrances to the park for pedestrians, but we also have a bike trail now that goes along our northern boundary of the park, which connects us up to regional trails. The North Star Rail is our western boundary, so there's a stop in Fridley, and in the future there may be another stop put in just a half a mile of us north of us in Coon Rapids at Foley Boulevard. So if that goes in, but we've got access from North Star Rail. Springbrook is on a bus route, and the front of the Nature Center is a bus stop, and just half a mile down the street from us is the northern hub for bus transportation in the North Minneapolis area. And obviously with cars, we have good access with 694, where the location is in between 694 and 610. So I think one of the reasons we have a lot more use than some of the other centers do in the metropolitan area is because we are so accessible to people. And it is a regional use because of that. It's a destination. We have schools coming to the Nature Center from over 30 different communities in the metropolitan area. One of the reasons we started working on this project was because the park is being loved to death. There are just so many people coming out there. We're not built and designed to have so many people come out. So we worked with the community, with the business community, and the schools, and many other segments of the community to come up with some ideas on how to do this. The foundation raised some money to hire some architects to put all that put in into schematic designs, as you can see here. So what we would be doing with this project is to increase some aspects of the size of the interpretive center that we have. One of the things we've discovered is that schools now, back when I started, they would bring one class at a time. Now they want to bring an entire fourth grade at a time, which is often 200 kids, and we can't handle that many. So we have many schools that are coming out that we have to turn away just because we can't even get that many kids at one time into our building. We have chambers of commerce and business groups that want to come out and use this as a retreat or want to have other groups coming to the center. There is no place in Fridley right now where you can seat 250 people at one place, and this would be a fantastic setting for that. So we have the business community support for doing this. So expanded interpretive center facility, outdoor classrooms, an outdoor memorial plaza area, a small amphitheater for small activities and things that would be going on, community gathering areas. So we have a lot of different activities that would be going on that we would be able to accommodate. What we're trying to do is focus the use into the front 7 acres of the park so that we can sustain the viability of the other 120 acres of the park itself. And that's what the goal of this whole project is. So with that, I think I'm going to open it up to any questions, if you have any, for the project. I know we've talked with many of you independently, so you have some awareness of the project.
You guys can put the billboards down now. We have okay, them in here. So.
I would say that this is we parts of this are shovel ready, and working with the architects, we've gotten to that point, and working. We also have, and you have this in your notes there as well, that the project itself would have 65 full-time equivalents in jobs creation, as well as long-term bringing $3 million a year into the economy in the area.
Give me more information on parts of this are shovel-ready.
What we have done over the years as we've presented this for bonding and been turned down, we broke the project up a couple of years ago with the architect into phases so that we could start working on a phase one, a phase two, and a phase three in between times while we were coming here to ask for the funds from the capital investment committees. And so what we had the architects do with the last phase of this was to have phase one be shovel ready. So phase one is shovel ready. In fact, that's one of the reasons we were able to get started with that berm last year, because we had it all ready to go. We knew what we had to do. All we had to do was go out and find contractors and get started with the work. So the project, from the standpoint of architects having it drawn up and being ready to go, for the phase one part of it, which is that the berm and the pavilion in the entrance and the community gathering area is all shovel ready. In order to get phase two, and we'd have to do phase two and phase three, more work with utilities and that kind of work to have those be shovel ready.
So is the pre-design and the design already done?
The pre-design is done for phase one. But the pre-design is not done for phase two and phase three, which
the
is
the short answer is, Mr. Chair, if I may, is that if we were given the, if we got the support of the $5 million bonding, we would be ready to go this fall with construction.
For the entire project?
We would move right to phase three.
Phase three.
Which is the largest
skipping
portion
phase,
of the...
Skipping phase two?
We would work backwards instead of forward. With those significant dollars, we could do phase three, which is by far the largest portion of the project, which is the added construction of the interpretive center, and we would move right into phase two.
Is that already designed?
It is essentially designed. We'd have to have some architectural drawings done on it, but we've already worked with architectural firms, and we haven't moved forward to that bit because we need We need more. We need the support of the bonding bill to get to that. We could have that done within 2 months because we're that close with the project. So it's about 85% on paper, and the other 15%, 2 months tops, and we would be in construction.
Any questions from the committee? Senator Goodwin, any final comments?
Well, just that I think one of the best things about this area is that it is a worthy cause, is that it is the only area of its kind in the whole North Metro area. So it's the only place where they have this combination of things that are valuable to our communities. And years ago, people wanted to make a golf course out of it, and thankfully they didn't, because now it is just really a jewel. And kids from all over go to it, parents go to it. They have all kinds of events around holidays and so forth. And it's good access for kids, even to keep them off the street, quite frankly. Kids that can go there and are starting to learn to just enjoy nature. So I think it's a very worthy project. I've spoken to the governor about it. It wasn't in his bonding bill last time, but he did say that if it comes in the bonding bill, he will sign it, and that's a refreshing change for us. So.
But you have had it in previous bonding bills?
Yes, it was in past.
Was it line item vetoed? Is that what it was? Okay, and
with many other projects.
Just something for you to think about after you leave here, because you have what appears to be $1.9 million in match money, and in the bill itself it says no non-state match is required for this project. Sometimes in bonding bills it helps to have some match, and so if you think about putting the $1.9 million in the bill if you want to when it gets further on in the process. So you don't have to make that decision now, but if you want to do that, you can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And another point is that currently the whole park is funded by the city of Fridley through their property taxes, and that's the way it's been. There isn't the that's the only option to keep it open right now, even though it's enjoyed free by people all over the country and all over the state.
Okay, we'll lay Senate file number 24 over for possible inclusion and recommendation to the bonding committee. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Senator Lori.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
You got enough chairs?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Which bill do you want to do first?
Senate File 27, the Big Lake Sanitary District bonding request.
Whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have the pleasure of introducing local representatives, including the Big Lake Area Sanitary District, the City of Cloquet, Fongelac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and Perch Lake Township. And this project, they're not here today, but also has gained the support of the Western Lake Superior Sanitary Sewer District, as well as the members of the Carlton County Board and Planning Commission. And these folks are all here this afternoon to offer testimony that shows why the Big Lake Sanitary District is in need of assistance, as outlined in Senate File 27 here. This project has been long in the making. We've been working on it for the past 8 years, and there's been numerous public meetings and discussions that have brought the Sanitary District and this consolidated group of local representatives to the conclusion that the best way to address the pollution of the Big Lake is to convey the sewage to the city of Cloquet to be then shipped to Duluth for the treatment at WLSSD. A survey of the lake properties in the fall of 2012 demonstrated that over 50% of the on-site septic systems are failing or do not meet the requirements of Carlton County on-site sewer ordinance. The most logical and cost-effective alternative from these failing individual systems is to build a pressure sewer around the lake and pump the sewage to the WSSD facilities in Duluth through the Cloquet station there, where the waste can then be treated to meet the strict environmental requirements of nutrient removal that WLSSD provides. These requirements would be extremely difficult if the Big Lake Area Sanitary District were to try to build their own treatment facility on site. And the logical and cost-effective solution then, endorsed by almost everyone in the district and the board and the residents, unfortunately, it doesn't really meet with the MPCA's parameters of assigning funding priority points through the PFA process. So in all likelihood, this project will never be funded under the present point system as applied. The district here is asking that we help by moving this project for the reasons to be provided in this afternoon's testimony by the folks that have been working with it on a day-to-day basis.
Back, Senator Lurie, go back to that PFA explanation. Why won't PFA fund this?
Well, these folks that have been working very long, because of a set of unique circumstances, this project will never get the points that are required. It's actually quite a bit shy of the points, but it is a project that is very needy and will result in a significant improvement for the lake. And a lot of the testifiers will cover this. Okay. And I know that PFA is here as well, if members have questions as to that and as to the value of this project. It isn't about the value of cleaning up this lake or the importance of cleaning up this lake. It's about a point allocation process that just doesn't work for this unique situation. And so we're coming and asking for a little bit different route than we typically see. And we need to be straight up about that and address why the points aren't allocated here. And again, the folks, the experts are on the table that have been working day to day on this will be able to give much more detailed information about that. So with that, I'll just jump right to the testifiers. I'll start with Mr. Tom Luke, supervisor of the Perch Lake Board, to lead the testimony. And Tom has been working on the trenches on this project since 2004 to bring this forward. So Tom was also actually instrumental in helping create the sanitary district that we're talking about, and I've been meeting with them intermittently since 2007, and actually been working hard to get the USDA grant and loan funding to make up the balance of some of the funding. So there's local participation, federal participation. What we're asking for from the state is actually a 40% match on total project costs under the 50% that's allowable. But with that, I'll invite Tom to take over from here.
Thank you, Senator Lurie. You pretty much stole my thunder by summarizing the project. He has a very...
You don't have to talk. Well, no, just say your name for the record, Mr. Luke.
Okay. My name is Tom Luke, supervisor for Perch Lake Township. And I'd like to extend my thanks to the chairman and the committee members for giving us this opportunity to speak on behalf of the Big Lake Area Sanitary District. As Senator Lurie mentioned, we're seeking $4.5 million in bonding funding to help support our project. We have a presentation guide that I believe all of the committee members have that summarizes the project. And I'd like to go over just a couple of points to highlight the reasons why we're seeking this additional funding. One of the first points we have is this project is unique, as Tony mentioned, in that it has a solution that because of the way the MPCA ranks projects, the Big Lake Area Sanitary District will never be accomplished without bonding bill assistance. Since 2004, the county, the township, the Fond du Lac Band, the Sanitary District, and Western Lake Superior Sanitary District have studied the impact of the failing septic systems in the area. All parties agree that the solution of building a pressure sewer gathering system around the lake to collect the wastewater and pump the sewage to Cloquet, which would then go on to WLSSD for treatment, is the best solution for the county and the lake area. Unfortunately, the MPCA's ranking system fails to appropriately recognize and rank our solution. Because of the time spent, we have the unanimous support of all parties endorsing this project, including, as I mentioned, local government, the Fond du Lac Band, and Western Lake Superior Sanitary District. The project does not meet the MPCA point system because... The first point, the state did not evaluate the mass loading of phosphorus and mercury because they determined the lake was a reservation lake. Our lake is situated on the Fond du Lac Reservation. When, in fact, 50% of the property around the lake is fee title, not band members, it's privately owned by taxpaying citizens, and this results in a loss of 20 points using the MPCA point system. The MPCA grants another 20 points if the project would build a local wastewater treatment plant. Building a plant to meet the very restrictive discharge standards would be very expensive and would require a full-time operational control. The Big Lake Area Sanitary District can connect to Western Lake Superior Sanitary District for less cost, can serve an additional 115 residents on the way to the connection to Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, and save $100,000 in operating cost per year. And again, we would be penalized for another 20 points because we're not using our own treatment facility when the better opportunity is to connect to Duluth. The MPCA priority points system contains a provision of calculating density of failed system in an impact area for our project to be a 7-mile diameter circle. And if you'll look in your packet on towards one of the last pages, there's a visual that shows this impact circle. It's actually the last page. And this 7-mile radius is an exaggeration of the area that we are trying to facilitate treatment, which is strictly around the lake and then following County Road 7 to the Fond du Lac Tribal Center, where there's a catch basin there where we could discharge the sewage there, and it would then be carried on to Cloquet and then ultimately to Duluth for treatment. So in summary, the pollution problem, in the last point, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency suggests that a cluster system is the solution to our pollution problem. The reality is the land around our lake is either a wetland with steep slopes, which is one of the reasons why we have this problem to begin with, or the land is tied up in Fond du Lac trust land that's not available for treatment. And there is a handout, I believe, in your packet that demonstrates the restricted land use that we're encompassed with here. The red and blue slashed areas account for Fond du Lac properties, and the green areas are fee title land, but many of them are wetlands or they're on a steep slope that will not support individual treatment facilities.
So how many miles around the lake is it?
It's approximately 7 miles to go around the lake, and it's an additional, I believe, close to 6 miles to get to where we could connect to the primary sewer line.
Is Cloquet willing to take your stuff?
I have the mayor of the city of Cloquet here. Mr. Aldrin can address that.
Mr. Chair, Cloquet is ready to take it, and WLSSD does have the excess capacity to handle this as well and are in favor of the project.
Thank you, Tony.
Senator Chairman. Scalzi, wait. Senator Scalzi has a question. So is Senator Scoy. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you,
Scalzi.
Mr. Chair. I'm just kind of curious. You're requesting $4.5 million, but for a grant. You're not requesting a loan. Is that correct? And why would you not request a loan instead of a grant?
Inside your packet, there is a summary of the finances and a breakdown of the project cost in it and the different alternatives that we've looked at. Right now, we're looking for a USDA grant of $7.1 million, which would cover about 50% of that cost. In order to qualify for the grant, we have to take out a loan, and the USD loan is going to be $2.6 million, which is about 18% of the cost. Part of the parameters is we're trying to keep the usage fee for the people that connect to this. A lot of these folks are retired and have limited income. And we're trying to keep the usage fee at $75 to $80 or less per month to connect to the sewer system. And if we could seek some money from the bonding bill, that would help buy down the project, where the payback for the loan would keep our usage fee around that $75 to $80 a month charge. So did that answer your question?
Mr. Chair, no, I was wondering why you did not apply for a loan, which would effect give you the money, and still then the people who use it would pay for it. I'm just kind of curious.
It pushes that usage fee to the point where the project would never be feasible. We're in a situation where it's a very difficult terrain. It's a pristine lake. We found a good solution, but it's just slightly out of our reach without some assistance.
Senator Scalzi.
And my next question would be, have you thought of doing mound systems? I understand there's lots of lakes in Minnesota that have high water tables, so people are building a mound system in various locations, and that provides a lot of evaporation capability.
Correct. And I've been involved with this project since 2004, actually prior to that when it first came to the surface. And again, looking at this map, this is one of the reasons why we couldn't do the cluster collection and the community mound type systems is there just isn't the proper property allotment to facilitate that type of treatment.
Are you saying then that there wasn't enough space to do a grouping of mounds, not one cluster, but a number of mounds to gain the same work?
We did look at, for years, we looked at building our own treatment facility, one on the north end of the lake and possibly one on the south end of the lake. What's unique about our environment here is we sit right in the middle of the Laurentian Divide. So we have a continental divide. Any watershed to the north of us will ultimately end up into Lake Superior, and there's a mercury requirement we have to meet. Any watershed to the south end of our lake will end up in the St. Croix Basin, and we have a phosphorus standard that we have to meet. So doing our own treatment puts a real expensive cost on a small community system that makes it cost prohibitive when we're within reach of the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District. That's a fully staffed, fully operational, professional operation that can take the waste and properly treat it. We feel it's the best solution for our problem.
And Mr. Chair, this is an area I know you drive through like every week on your way down here. It's west of the freeway off of 210, just to the north side of 210. Pretty low area, a lot of swamp around there.
Correct.
Tough to get septic systems and sewer systems to work and perk. And you know, the WSSD lift station in Cloquet is just down the road. You pick up that 115 additional homes on your way to it. It really turns out to be a lower cost alternative. We lose the points in the system because we're not having our own treatment system. But the gains are so significant that it's really important that we approach it in this more cost-effective manner, pick up these additional homes, treat the sewage better, and avoid all of these issues with the lowlands around this lake that have been plaguing this project for much of this time.
Senator Scalzi, I think we had a presentation this morning in bonding on PFA, and the points that they have are 231. They need to be down to around 45 in order to get funding, so they got a long ways to go in order to get there.
Right.
And incidentally, I don't ever turn off to go over there, so I know how dangerous it is over there, you know.
You should drive around my district sometime. You'd enjoy it.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Laurie and members. Basically, I am in 100% agreement that these lakes should be gone around with a high-pressure sewage treatment as opposed to the ISTS mechanisms. I just think it's a better treatment, particularly if you've got a city close enough. And I think at some point the state's going to have to figure out a funding mechanism for that to happen so that we can protect the water quality of many lakes that have high density of homes around them. A couple questions. I see the USDA requirement on bullet point 9 on your presentation. You're complying with the USDA requirement, 1.5% of this MHI. I'm assuming that's the local effort. But in their requirement, do they count the state grant as part of that MHI local effort?
Yes, if I could, John Stewart, our system engineer here, would be happy to answer that question.
Mr. Stewart, why don't you grab a chair and sit down next to these guys.
It's not every day I have a senator give up his seat for me.
No, it's all good.
He's a really nice guy if you haven't met him yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Say your name for the record, please.
Name in the record is John Stewart, STEWART, and I'm an engineer with MSA Consulting Engineers.
Okay.
MSA has worked with the district since 2005 on this project, so we have a little bit of information, depth of knowledge on it. Your question was, why did we go into USDA and ask them for money?
No. Senator Scully, repeat the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that, I understand why you went to USDA, and I know that they have a requirement of a percentage of local effort. And the question is the state included in the USDA calculation of local effort?
Mr. Chairman, it's a very simple calculation that USDA does. The first thing they determine is how much the local community can afford, and that's that $2.6 million. The balance of the project then could be funded by USDA grant monies. The problem is that we would then be asking for something on the order of $8 or $9 million of grant money. USDA gets about $16 to $19 million for the whole state. And it would not really make a lot of sense to them, I don't believe, to give half of their total grant money to one project, and especially one project that's prioritized in the manner that PCA would do it. If we had a reasonable prioritization number of, say, 60 or 61 points, it would be a lot further along getting the USDA grant. The reason we put in for $4.5 million in bonding bill monies was so that we would have an increase in opportunity of getting the balance in USDA grant. We're trying to look for alternative funding sources to make this project viable.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Chair. Okay, that makes sense to me. And then to Senator Lurie, rather than just coming for a bonding bill, why not just make this effort to make the MPCA change their point requirements or to give you some exemption to the point requirements so that you can just utilize what you normally would have utilized if they did meet the points? That would appear to me to be a better direction. I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, you know, I think this is an exemption from the point system, is one mechanism of, that's how I actually do characterize it. And there's been some discussion about changing the point system, but that seemed like a much bigger bite. The time. I think that we get into a whole host of issues, but I think it might be a worthwhile conversation, but it seemed like it would delay this project significantly were we to try to take off that bite. You know, that's probably a multi-year project, and we'd really like to see this one that's been going since 2004 get up and running and maybe be the template for why we need to take a better and more thorough look. I mean, if we were to draft how the points should be allocated, it would be tailored to this one project. And, you know, truthfully, it probably needs a much broader review than that. We're bringing up a host of issues, but certainly not all of them. And that's a really long and complicated, convoluted set of policies that we'd have to address. So, I mean, I would be in support of taking a look at that, but I would have problems if it delayed this for an additional several years. This lake is really been identified as one in great need of some better handling for the sewage for a long time and the residents, and we've come up with a good solution and think that it bears consideration. You know, one of the things on the 1.5%, I wonder if members, it was a little confusing to me, that of the MHI, that's the median household income. And I don't know if members caught that. It's, you know, we're trying to get the financing such that we can get the monthly costs down to $50 to $75 a month, which would then yield less than a 1.5% of median household income for the resident served by this system, is the target that USDA is looking for in order to approve some of their projects.
Senator Scoy.
Well, so just that clarification about what that calculation is and how it plays out is.
Well, thank you, Senator Lurie. I appreciate your answer. I appreciate your concern on not holding up this project. But as somebody that has had bonding projects around for 10, 12 years before they actually got funded, I don't know that you might not be quicker to take a more general approach to this, because, you know, some bonding projects, it just takes a long time to get it. And
yes,
I would encourage you to take a little look-see. I mean, this making this a reservation lake when more than half the land is held in fee, that shouldn't be the case. This area, impact area thing that MPCA, I look at your map. I mean, you certainly have an argument to make that the radius that they're drawing isn't accurate. You know, I'd encourage you to take a look at that, because some of this stuff looks to me like it's due for a review.
Do you want to hear from the PFA?
If you'd like to, Mr. Chair, I'm happy.
Or the MPCA? I mean, I think we'd be looking at several years of study just to develop an approach to propose to the legislature for a reassignment of the point system. This is a rather involved process.
Mr. Freeman here? Do you want to comment on this? Yeah. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Freeman. We've had these discussions several times. Go ahead. Say your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jeff Freeman. I'm the Executive Director of the Public Facilities Authority. To the point of the priority system and the way the funding process works, the system is set up to have general applicability to public sewer projects of all different types across the state. And it actually, we feel, works really pretty well in most cases. And the PCA did amend their rules on the priority system, I think, about 5 or 6 years ago. And we've seen that it really is a much better system and does a better job of prioritizing projects now than it did before. But it doesn't work for every project. And some of the most challenging situations are these unsewered areas. Each one is so kind of unique in its circumstances and situation that it becomes really hard to kind of generalize and characterize the right solution and the right priority and the right scope of project for all of them. So we've got a system that, with respect to unsewered areas, the priority and the kind of the focus is on trying to find small-scale, decentralized solutions, mound systems and cluster systems and that kind of thing, because that's the emphasis is on trying to solve these, break the problem down into small pieces and solve those in as economical way as possible. Now, the fact of the matter, that works and has worked well in a lot of situations, but it doesn't fit every situation. And, you know, we're not, I mean, this is a good project that needs, it's an area that needs a solution to its wastewater problems. It doesn't fit the point system as well as the funding process very well, so I mean, that's kind of the bottom line is we have looked at the priority system. It has been changed. It's much better than it was in the past, but it doesn't fit every solution, every situation.
Senator Scoy? Well, you're done. Okay. All right. And to Senator Scoy's suggestion, what would need to be done here to get some funding out of you?
Senator, Mr. Chair, members, I think PCA has really looked closely at this to try to figure out is there a way to get the points up. I'm not so sure that the issue of the lake and the reservation land is quite correct. I don't think that's really a major issue of the points, but certainly the scope of the project, the size of the area is sort of what part of the issue is. If the legislature doesn't see fit to go this route, what we would do is, you know, go back, or they would work with them and look at, can we break this into small decentralized pieces? As has been testified, the land area, the groundwater issues, and the swamps and that pose a problem with that, as well as because there's so many households involved, the operational costs of that, if you have start having multiple decentralized systems, I mean, that certainly is a potential problem. So, you know, that's what we'd have to do is start looking at how to break it apart, but that may not be the best in the long run.
Senator Scoy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, recognizing what you just said, that this appears to be the preferable outcome for everybody that's sitting at the table, is there some mechanism that we can do to give you some administrative flexibility or something to try to make this fit the, you know, what we all just recognized as the best solution? How do we make it work?
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy, you know, I think in our view, this would be the mechanism, that if the programs try to fit as many of the situations as possible, and those that don't fit approach the legislature for a special appropriation because it doesn't fit the standard situation. You know, we could consider looking at program changes, but we did go through that process a few years back, made a number of changes. It's really hard to design programmatically a process that works for these large unsewered areas. It's pretty tough, and it's something that we feel like we've got sort of the right approach, it does, unfortunately, doesn't work for everybody. And so the process being approaching the legislature when something doesn't fit the program, we're not opposed to that.
Yeah, and PFA does a really good job of doing their work. And so maybe this is the right way to do it, or maybe we just need to hash it out a little bit more and figure out if we can figure out another exception or figure out how to do this, because this does seem like a really good solution to me for this particular area.
You're on the right track there, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'm happy you understand that. Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Do we need more testimony or?
Well, I'll ask them to be brief. I did have a few other testifiers that came from quite a ways. Reed LeBeau with the Fond du Lac Band, he didn't come from very far. Maybe he can be quick. I don't know. He's a fixture around here.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Reed LeBeau on behalf of the Fond du Lac Band. Just want to thank Senator Lorie and you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bill, and we support the project. One-third of the folks affected are band members. As has been already stated, part of it is within the reservation boundary, and we've been working with the local community for the last 8 years and support the project. Thank you.
Speaking of the local, how many hookups would there be other than, you said 115 going into town, but then how many around the lake?
There's approximately 240 to 250 connections around the lake. Some of these are seasonal properties, very few of them. More and more people have turned to the lake for a year-round residency. So about 240 around the lake right now, and then another 115 going into town.
And so I didn't understand, the 240, how many are seasonal?
Probably less than a dozen now, I would say.
Okay, and they're okay with the $75 a month on the.
Yes, we've gone around and around with this thing, as been stated, for about 8 years, and a lot of the complications came in trying to site our own treatment facility, and in doing so, the costs got very expensive for siting the treatment facility that we weren't sure how long it was going to last. What would the longevity be, 20 years? 20 years from now, we'd be faced with the same problem. When the opportunity to connect to WSSD came up, everybody endorsed this as the right thing to do, because now we're going to take the effluent and the waste and ship it down to a professional treatment facility that's there to stay for the long term.
And, Mr. Chair, you're actually teasing out some of the real issues. I mean, this used to be a lake that was largely seasonal.
Correct.
And it's getting year-round residents, now about 250, and it's a small lake with not a lot of water in it, and it's under a really heavy load, and it's deteriorating rapidly without any solutions coming to bear. And so with that change, you know, we have to act quickly to try to handle this better, because it's not going to get any better without our help.
Mr. Berquist, did you want to say something?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you for having us here. I was supposed to be last, but hopefully not least.
Are you related to the Chisholm Berquists?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yes would have been the right answer. But anyway,
I tried to prep him,
yes.
Mr. Chair.
Can I change my testimony?
Do you want the mayor to go first? Because
Mayor Bruce Algren of the city of Cloquet was here to make just a couple of points.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bruce Algren. I'm the mayor of the city of Cloquet. And we're in favor of the project for a number of reasons, but I'll be very brief. We like to partner with our neighbors and the Fond du Lac Band whenever we can. We have the infrastructure. The WLCSD has the capacity for the effluent to go down to Duluth. I'm also a member of the WLCSD board, so I know what I'm talking about sometimes. One of the things with the lake is that there's a number of Cloquet residents that live on the lake. And also, it would help with failing sewer systems along County 7 once it hits the Cloquet border. It would be a couple miles of citizens of Cloquet. So, anyway, we feel it's a good project. They've been working on it for 8 years. I know they know what they're talking about, and we're in favor of it, and we'd like to help our neighbors out. Thank you.
So this is like Cloquet-friendly, huh?
Well, this is actually Big Lake is the closest lake to the city of Cloquet, and there's a lot of people from Cloquet that we believe it's our lake, but they take care of it for us.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, Barry Bergquist, the first cousin of the Chisholm Bergquists, is here to wrap up the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Glad we cleared that up.
Okay. Yes, my name is Barry Bergquist, and I live in Cloquet. I'm a small businessman there. I've been there all my life. I would say all my life, but I haven't passed away yet, so it's not quite. But my family had a summer cabin on the lake, and I grew up my summers swimming and boating and water skiing there. And over the years, I have watched the water quality become lower and lower, and the weeds grow thicker and thicker. I'm also a member of the Big Lake Improvement Association, and we've been working on this for many, many years, and the members there are overwhelmingly in support of this project to go forward. And I would like to conclude with one thing, is that Big Lake has achieved national fame in 1832 when Henry Schoolcraft was on an expedition exploring the source of the Mississippi River. He walked around Big Lake, and he made the comment in his journal that this water is beautiful, pristine, and the beaches are covered with agates and cornelians. So we've already been recognized nationally.
Are the agates and carnelians still there?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, okay.
Come take a look.
I will.
Make
I'm
a right turn there.
I'm going to turn off. I am. I'm going to turn off. Okay. All right. Okay. Any further questions or comments? And, Senator Lurie, I'd ask you to wrap it up, but I got a funny feeling you'd make a long speech, so I'm not going to do that. So if any of the committee members have any other questions, if not, we'll lay Senate File 27 over for possible inclusion in the recommendation of the bonding committee. So thank you very much.
So
thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Lurie, a question?
No. he's still here, so you can ask him again.
Okay.
Senate File 93, Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one's should be a little bit quicker. I've got the city administrator, Sam Griffith, from the city of Sandstone here. What this is a request for $200,000 to support the public infrastructure needs of a healthcare campus in the city of Sandstone. Members may recall over the last couple of years there was a lot of work around whether Essentia was going to continue to provide the hospital services in Sandstone or not. That has been resolved. Essentia and Sandstone, the Northern Pine Area Hospital District, are under a new agreement that's going to work very well, and it calls for some new medical facilities in our region, and it's going to require a healthcare campus. The city is going to have to do about $2.3 million of upgrades, and we're asking for less than 10% of that in state assistance in getting this campus ready to make Sandstone able to continue to be a player in rural health care in our region. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sam Griffith, again, the city administrator from the city of Sandstone.
Welcome, Mr. Griffith. Just say your name for the record, please.
My name is Sam Griffith. I'm not only the city administrator, but I'm also the executive director of the Sandstone EDA. I am the animal control officer, assistant weed control, et cetera, et cetera.
I get tired of saying
dog
all
catcher?
That, so I just call him the city administrator.
Are you the dog catcher, too?
I'm animal control. Oh, I have an assistant, but I am in charge of animal control, yes. Once again, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for this opportunity. Just a little quick background. Sandstone's got a population of about 2,800. We're about 90 miles straight up Interstate 35 from the Capitol here. Our request is for some funds to assist in putting in the infrastructure necessary for a medical campus site. The current hospital was built in 1950. It is functionally obsolete, and what we're looking for is some assistance in making an investment in a facility that hopefully will last another 60 years. The existing facility obviously limits the care and services that can be provided. This is a critical access hospital, provides 24-hour emergency care with a level 4 trauma center, acute hospital services, and ALS, BLS ambulance services. The property is owned by the North Pine Area Hospital District, and the facility is leased to Essentia. The history is back in the 90s, St. Mary's Hospital at that time actually started leasing the facility, and there was a new lease signed here very recently in 2012. Among other things, what it calls for is master planning for a medical campus site, and there is a memorandum of understanding between the city and Essentia to carry that forward. The market demand study is done, the financial feasibility work is underway, and a developer is in the process of being selected. The other thing, too, is the agreement calls for construction to start in September 2014, so we are on a very, very tight timeline. We've been, the city, the hospital district, Essentia, we've been working on this since 2005. And one of the things you have in your packet is a little map that shows that the EDA actually went out and on its own dime went out and bought some property so that we could prepare for this. We've rezoned it. We've had all of the engineering done. There is a preliminary stormwater management plan. The wetlands delineation is done. Basically, we're at the point where we could tell our engineers to draw plans and specs. The other thing, too, is Essentia Sandstone is the second largest employer in the city. Pays over $10 million a year in wages and benefits to the area. There's 250 full-time equivalent employees, translates into about 310 actual employees. And it makes close to $400,000 a year in local purchases. So obviously it's incredibly important to our local economy and to the economic future of the city. As part of this total cost, please also realize $400,000 of that is what it's going to cost us to do the turn lanes and striping and marketing and everything on State Highway 23. So a large portion of this is the requirements of MnDOT. The city has already pledged $200,000 in cash as part of this to help get this going, in addition to the discussions with the federal EDA, deed, all of these kinds of things. You also have in your packet a letter of support from Essentia, and we think that's very, very important. I would have a letter of support from the North Pine Area Hospital District Board. They meet quarterly, and last night was their meeting. So it was a little difficult to get an approval and get it in your packet yesterday. So, but once again, this is a critical access hospital, pays a very large percentage of the city wages and benefits, and these are quality health care jobs. We have a lot of summer visitors. Our part of the county almost doubles in population in the summertime, and we're right off Interstate 35. So we appreciate your consideration of this investment in the economic future of our community and in quality rural health care. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, committee? Senator Lurie, this is not sewer-type infrastructure, was it?
No.
No.
Okay. No.
Okay. Is the striping you mentioned part of the infrastructure that we're talking about, or is
Mr. Chair, in the third page of the handout that should be available is the Trunk Highway 23 at the east and west end and the Trunk Highway 123 at in town, and the changes that would need to be done to that to accommodate the new traffic flows. Those are MnDOT requirements, but they're incurred by the city. The rest of the infrastructure costs are on the top of that chart, $1.1 million of street 185 of storm sewer. There is some sanitary sewer there, 114 and 1,000 and 483,000 for the water main. These are public infrastructure costs to get this healthcare campus ready, but then so it's 10 cents on the dollar just for the public infrastructure, but then it drives also the private investment of Essentia in new healthcare facilities in Sandstone as well. So it's really, in broader project terms, a very small percentage of the ask that we're making of the state.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Anything else?
Thank
okay.
you.
Then we'll leave Senate File 93 over for possible inclusion and recommendation of the Bonding Committee.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Senator Lurie. You did well. Is Senator Rosen around? Oh, there you are.
Hello, Mr. Chair.
Hello, Senator Rosen.
Nice to see you.
I have your old office.
Excuse me?
I have your old office.
Did I leave anything for you, Mr. Chair?
Yes, you did. I'm not taking it down either because I can't reach it.
A little memory. Okay, that's nice. Mr. Chair, that's funny. We have some maps coming here, too, for you. So we have Senate file. Oh, golly.
Do you want to wait?
No, that's okay, Mr. Chair, if that's all right. It's Senate file 103, and it deals with the Truman Stormwater Project. And Truman's a little town in my district, South Central in Martin County, of 1,100 residents, and it's a strong ag-based economy. And they were at the ground zero during a severe flooding that occurred in southern Minnesota in September of 2010. And they received over 30 inches of rain in 24 hours. So there was major devastation publicly and private property. 80% of the homes received basement flooding and loss of the personal belongings. And after a visit to the devastation with Governor Pawlenty, the legislature went into special session and passed legislation to help fund 25% of the public infrastructure and public cleanup costs incurred by the cities in the presidential disaster area. And FEMA funded the other 75% of the nearly $200,000 in the public cost incurred. Most of Truman's stormwater system was constructed in the 1950s and has trunk lines that are undersized for even a 2 to 3 inch rainfall because this whole community kind of sits in this bowl. In the last 3 years, Truman has invested heavily to address the undersized stormwater system, the number one public health and safety priority in the community. 2009 Phase 1 project, Truman worked cooperatively with Martin County to extend an open ditch 1 mile to Truman to eliminate a mile of 18-inch diameter pipe, which was the main outlet for stormwater to leave Truman, which was $400,000 is owed for this much-needed improvement. In 2010, the city constructed Phase 2, which is the 1,500 feet of 60-inch diameter outfall pipe from the new open ditch into the city to connect other undersized collector trunk lines. Another $400,000 was borrowed to complete this project. So paying the debt with a tax levy and the new stormwater utility fee to each residence and business. The third and last major part of the plan to eliminate flooding in Truman is why we have this bill in front of you today, Mr. Chair and members. Phase 3 consists of running a large 42-inch diameter trunk line to two areas in town that have had repeated flooding with every large rainfall. These trunk lines will replace the current 12-inch and 15-inch trunk diameter trunk line, which are severely overloaded from other lines feeding into them. And this phase is of the comprehensive project has a price tag of $2.5 million and is unaffordable to Truman's residents and few businesses. With me, Mr. Chair and members, I have the City Administrator of Truman, Monty Roman, and he could go through more explanation why it does not qualify for PFA. I know Mr. Freeman's here, and he can mention, too, why it's not qualified for public facility dollars. And with that, I would like to introduce Mr. Roman.
Mr. Roman, welcome to the committee. Just say your name for the record so we hear your voice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Monty Roman. I'm the city clerk treasurer of Truman.
And Senator Rosen has explained there are three phases, the third phase being the most expensive. And on the maps you have there, I point some of the things out there, too, is that the on the page 2, it shows the areas of the town that were flooded, kind of shaded in red. During the flood, our city engineer went around and drawed out those areas in red. So you can see it hits a lot of areas of town. The yellow lines on there, we have our county-owned Main Street goes right through the middle of town, east and west. It's very high. It kind of acts like a berm. And then the former railroad track land goes north and south on that other line, yellow line. So it kind of cuts the town into quadrants, and the water has to go underneath those areas in tiles, which are 12-inch and 15-inch lines, and they're fed by many other 10- and 12-inch lines. So the water just can't get through those berms fast enough. So those 42-inch lines that we're proposing would go underneath those areas to get that water to our new Phase 2 line, which was that 60-inch line, and then feed down to the open ditch then, which eventually goes to the Blue Earth River and then eventually to the Minnesota River northeast of Truman a ways. But the flooding affected 80% of our residents, mostly basement flooding. And of course, FEMA does not cover basement flooding, but it's a continual problem in Truman. We had floods in 93, 2005, and of course in 2010. And even 2- and 3-inch rains caused these areas to flood severely, causing the, those a backup to our into our basements. And so the community it became number one priority in our comprehensive plan we did a couple years ago. It's a health and safety hazard for our community, and the residents want it taken care of by us, and we're working diligently to do that. But the funding for this Phase 3, which is the most expensive part, is what we're coming to ask for help for. And yes, in large part, that's what I have to say. I guess it's something we need help with and can't do it on our own.
So I heard you say that the basements don't qualify, but why doesn't the stormwater lines qualify for flood mitigation money?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to need some help with that, but the...
I mean, we can find it out, I'm sure, but...
Yeah.
Okay. Have you explored that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, we've looked at everything. This is, of course, is the second year of this bonding request, and we've been at this for a while. You know, they can't even get flood insurance on a 3-inch rain now, this community, because it does sit in this 5,000-acre watershed bowl, and they're... I mean, I was joking with Mr. Jensen that perhaps we should build a creek so we can get some DNR money or something. But if I could ask Mr. Freeman,
Senator Scoie has a city in his district that has a dike all the way around it. So, Senator Scoie.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, I was actually thinking that. Why wouldn't you qualify for some flood damage reduction monies? And I think the goal of those monies is to protect from a 100-year flood event. Well, if you're being impacted on a 3-inch rain, you certainly would be qualifying for that. And I don't know where that is, but it seems to me that you might be eligible for some of that.
Mr. Jensen has maybe a little help here.
Mr. Chairman, members, I did ask DNR to look at this project, and they said it doesn't fit their flood mitigation program because it's not caused by a stream or a lake flooding. So they said it would not fit in the flood mitigation.
Mr.
They
Chair.
They have looked at it.
So what's
Mr. Chair, can we...
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we change the language to say watershed flooding? Because that's the problem. This town sits and it all drains right into Truman.
Well,
as you
do.
Can tell, it was...
We change laws around here, so
we can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Senator Scoie.
Well, I mean... I don't even know if I should start talking
Go
about
ahead.
This. But so I mean, the problem you're going to run into, I would guess, is if you start doing the flood damage reduction, they're going to want you to put in some settling pans and upstream holding ponds and, you know, that type of impacts to minimize the impact of the water running in and then do the final treatment of the excess at the end. So there would be... you know, other projects that would be done in conjunction with this.
Mr. Ullman, do you have a comment?
Mr. Chairman, we hired Region 9 Development Commission this last year to try to get FEMA flood disaster, flood mitigation money. We worked very hard at that and worked with the state Homeland Security Emergency Management, but we didn't qualify for that because we didn't have, you have to have like multiple, you know, multi-million dollar events, and we didn't have the, you know, we didn't have the numbers to do that, I guess. So we did not qualify under FEMA flood mitigation. So we tried our hardest to get that, but we did not qualify. We're at the bottom end of a 5,000 acre watershed that is mostly farmland that drains our way. And this project will allow Truman's water to get out first before the farmland water comes in. Our problem is that our lines hold water back, and once the farm tiles, you know, start draining about a day later, it all comes in at one time, and we just can't handle it. So if we get Truman's water out first and then allow the farm water to kind of percolate the next day, it would really help us out a lot. But we have tried through FEMA for flood mitigation and didn't qualify, so we have tried that route.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And the flood went right up to the ceiling in the basement. It didn't go into the first floor. That's a FEMA requirement. And Mr. Roman could tell you the stories. His house was severely flooded.
Who
was
makes
a mess.
These rules? Jeez.
I know. So we're kind of in a pickle.
So, Senator Roser, Mr. Roman, it says here that you are committed to matching it with non-state sources. Do you have the non-state match, or is what you've already done considered it, or how are you doing it?
The non-state match would be with city bonding money. We have a couple of road projects that are coming due now. We'll be able to use that bonding money to rebond and pay our half of the project. So okay. We fund that internally through the city, yes.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Senator Rosen, any final comments?
No, Mr. Chair. I believe I think that the city has done their fair share and beyond for this problem. It's a wonderful community. We're asking 1.25 from the state. And would greatly appreciate your help in this, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And, thank you.
We'll lay this over for possible inclusion to recommendation to the bonding committee. Thank you very much. Senator File 179. Senator Kent, are you substituting for Senator Sieben? Welcome to the committee, Senator Kent. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be here today, and good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Susan Kent, and I am the state senator for District 53, which includes Woodbury, Landfall, and the southern parts of Maplewood and Oakdale. And relevant to this discussion, about 85% of my district is in Washington County, and I'm pleased to be here with a bunch of wonderful representatives from Washington County talking about a couple of issues today. I am
you all
here.
Voted for her, right?
My mind is not in the district, not in the same district. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Poor lady.
And I am here for Senator Sieben, who is chairing another committee and introducing a couple of other bills at this point, so I'm honored to be here representing this one today. First, I'm here to talk about Senate File 179, which is the Hastings Bridge Trail Connection Project. This is one of many great examples of Washington County working cooperatively with state agencies to solve problems, and in this case, it's MnDOT. For context, please recall that MnDOT is currently replacing the Highway 61 Mississippi River crossing at Hastings, a very big project, and that's at the southern edge of the county. When it's complete at the end of next year, the old two-lane bridge will be replaced with a four-lane bridge, as well as a 12-foot wide pedestrian bike path that will link the Mississippi River Trail to a number of other area trails. However, when the new bridge is completed, there will be a quarter-mile gap in the trail that links Washington County and Dakota County. This trail will be one of the most scenic trails in the trail system, which means many people will be using it throughout the year. Traffic on Highway 61 is well known as heavy, approximately 30,000 vehicles per day in that area. It's important to link the existing trail system with the new bridges trail because putting pedestrians and bikers together for that quarter mile with that level of traffic is irresponsible and quite possibly a tragedy waiting to happen. One might reasonably ask why this problem wasn't addressed in the planning, and there is a reason, and Washington County Commissioner Autumn Lehrke will be glad to address that question in her testimony. Washington County does come to the table today with resources to address its fair share when it comes to fixing this problem, but there is also a role that the state can play as well, and the optimal time to act is now. So here today to explain in greater detail the critical nature of this request is Washington County Autumn Lehrke.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Autumn Lerke. I'm the Vice Chair of the Washington County Board, and this project resides in my district. Along with me here at the table is City of Hastings Mayor Hicks, also in support of the project. The state and the county have been working together to complete the Hastings Bridge Replacement Project to provide the best value for its residents. As the new bridge is going up, we continue to work on connecting the trails from Dakota County to Washington County. Because of the urgency to replace the aging, fracture-critical bridge in Hastings, the bridge replacement project was accelerated in 2007 after the I-35 bridge collapse. Due to this urgency, the project scope was limited to only the river crossing to ensure the bridge was replaced as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, the urgency of the project did not allow planners to solve the existing gap in the trail system between Dakota County and Washington County. The quarter-mile gap is located immediately north of the Hastings Bridge Replacement Project and includes a crossing of an active railroad. The pedestrian trail on the Hastings Bridge terminates on the shoulder of U.S. Highway 61. Washington County recently learned that we will be receiving a $1 million federal grant, transportation grant in 2015 to assist in constructing the Point Douglas Regional Trail. This will be combined with approximately $800,000 of Parks and Trail legacy funds to complete the $1.8 million regional trail project. The Point Douglas Trail is approximately 2 miles long and connects the St. Croix River at the Point Douglas Park to the Mississippi River along U.S. 61. The community I represent is very excited for this project. As Senator Kent said, it's going to be one of the most scenic trails in the county. The problem is that the regional trail also terminates on the shoulder of U.S. 61, just a half mile north of the Hastings Bridge Trail. If nothing is done to close this gap, trail users will be asked to walk or bike alongside of the shoulder of the highway, which is a road, as was mentioned, that has about 30,000 vehicles per day. Closing this trail gap now makes a lot of sense, since the project could be combined with the construction of the Point Douglas Regional Trail, which would reduce the overall cost of the project. More importantly, the project would greatly improve the pedestrian safety on what's anticipated to be a very busy pedestrian route. And therefore, Washington County is seeking $2 million to close the gap in the regional trail system from Dakota to Washington County. Washington County is best positioned to extend this project limits of the Point Douglas Regional Trail to include the gap along Highway 61. In concert with our strong partnership with MnDOT, the trail extension could be completed shortly after the Hastings Bridge project is concluded, thus minimizing the time that the unsafe gap exists in the trail system. So this concludes my testimony. I just want to thank you all for your time, and please know that we have John Elholm, our Parks Director, with us, and we also have our county engineer, Wayne Sandberg, in the audience, if you have any questions.
So the trail's connected right now, but construction of the new bridge is disconnecting it? Is that what's going on?
Our trail ends right up at 61. The Point Douglas Trail will end right at 61, and the Hastings Bridge Trail ends right after the bridge. So I think a map was being passed around, maybe. That illustrates...
Well, it's not connected right now.
Right.
Okay.
And that's
all
why
right.
we need this.
Okay. All right. Okay. Does anybody else want to make any comments? As long as you're sitting at the table, go ahead.
Paul Hicks, Mayor, City of Hastings. We're very supportive of this project. We're very proud of the new bridge that all of us have invested in, the largest freestanding tight arch bridge in North America. And it will... I agree with the commissioner's comments that this is going to be one beautiful trail as part of the Washington County. It will connect to the bridge, and then when you get into Hastings, it also connects a trail that will go west towards Spring Lake Park Reserve and eventually through Rosemont up to Invergrove Heights. So it's very regionally significant, and we're looking forward to completing this project. And I want to compliment the Washington County and MnDOT. All of these parties, we've worked hard together to try to get this quarter mile finished. Thank you.
Sir, would you like to comment? I mean, I don't want you to sit there for nothing.
Mr. Chair,
on
members.
TV, if we were on TV, they would think, why is he there? So,
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. My name is John Elholm. I'm the Parks Director for Washington County. And really, just to echo what's been said here today is there's the Hastings Bridge has been recently constructed, which actually provided for a wider trail opportunity across the river than what was there before. and there is just the missing quarter mile gap to where the Point Douglas Regional Trail begins and takes pedestrians towards Prescott and Point Douglas Park.
So does Senator Kent or Commissioner, does the $2 million get the job done, or is there matching funds along with it? Or?
Mr. Chair, the $2 million will get the job done.
Get the job done. Do we need to put in there that no match is necessary? Do we need to put that in there?
Our grants is for our construction of this trail.
It's $1.5 million.
Sorry. Yeah. Do we need to put that in there that no match is necessary?
It's not for a program.
It's a separate appropriation, so we don't need to make
okay. Okay. All right. Any questions from the committee then? Any further comments from any of you? All right. Then thank you very much. Then we'll lay over Senate File 179 for possible inclusion for a recommendation to the full bonding committee. Thank you
thank
very
you
much.
Thank you very much.
Senator Kent pinch hitting again. Senator File 519.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Susan Kent from Senate District 53, here to present Senate File 519, another Washington County production, but from the other end of the county. This would help fund the design and construction of a grade-separated crossing of the proposed Browns Creek Trail at Manning Avenue in Stillwater in Washington County. And at this point, I would like to, because of late-breaking information, offer an author's amendment, if I might. I'd like to change the number, so the amendment would be that on line 1.6, instead of $1,500,000, it's $1 million. And
we like those kind of amendments.
I know. Aren't those nice? I'll tell you that story in a minute.
Too early
and
in the process
on line 1.12,
kind of
it would also be $1 million.
On 1.12. Okay. All right. All right. Just to make this official, Senator Kent moves, or no, Senator Scoey moves that on line 1.16 and on 1.12 that we change $1.5 million to $1 million. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Okay. Senator Kent, go ahead.
So to continue with the story then, to put this in context, Browns Creek Trail will be an important link in the hike and bike trail system that includes the Gateway State Trail, and it'll connect St. Paul and Stillwater and all the communities in between in Ramsey and Washington counties. As background, the DNR has acquired the Minnesota Zephyr Rail right-of-way for the purpose of developing it as the Browns Creek Trail. This particular segment connects the Gateway Trail to downtown Stillwater and the St. Croix National Scenic Riverway and is expected to be the state's most heavily used recreational trail. Washington County has contributed $1 million toward the purchase and will receive fee title to the rights-of-way where the trail crossed county roads. And the late-breaking information is that in the process of tearing up the old rail line, the DNR sold the rail line as scrap metal, and that's where that $500,000 came from. So good use of resources that were able to help defray the costs of this project. The county and DNR have had an excellent working relationship from the beginning on this project. They're jointly planning a bridge to cross County State Aid Highway 15, also known as Manning Avenue. Everyone who has seen this crossing understands the urgency of making this crossing safe. Approximately 10,000 cars travel on County 15 every day at highway speed. Local support for this project is very strong, and the cities of Stillwater and Grant have made this a priority. And as we can all envision, this project will have great regional benefits as well. Here today to explain in greater detail the critical nature of this request is Washington County Commissioner Gary Creasell.
Commissioner, thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. With me also is Councilmember Mike Polina from the City of Stillwater. I will try to speak relatively quickly because some of the points have already been covered. My name is Gary Creasell, Washington County Commissioner. I also, this project resides in my district. In 2012, the Minnesota DNR acquired the Minnesota Zephyr Rail right-of-way for conversion into a paved state trail. This new Browns Creek state trail will connect the Gateway State Trail, the state's busiest trail, to the downtown Stillwater, Minnesota. This trail is expected to see robust pedestrian and bicycle traffic. However, the corridor currently crosses Manning Avenue at grade, which is a road that sees over 10,000 vehicles per day at 55 miles per hour. Safety of pedestrians crossing this busy road is a significant concern and is the primary reason for this request. Both an underpass and bridge have been considered, but the bridge has been determined to be the most cost-effective way of separating pedestrian traffic on a new state trail from the vehicular traffic on Manning Avenue. The Bronze Creek State Trail is a Minnesota state trail. However, through a cooperative effort between agencies, Washington County proposes to take the lead on this project. Washington County will be reconstructing Manning Avenue in 2014, which is the same area where the bridge is. So working on both projects at the same time would result in significant cost savings. Funding for the acquisition and development of the new state trail is being provided by the Minnesota DNR, along with $1 million Washington County has a $1 million Washington County contribution. However, this funding is not sufficient to build the bridge in addition to the trail. Washington County is seeking $1 million to design and construct a new bridge over Manning Avenue for the Bronze Creek Trail.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Sieben, would you like to chime in here since this is your bill?
Mr. Chair and committee members.
Senator Kent's been doing a really good job.
I was going to say, I want to first thank Senator Kent for agreeing to present the bills. We just finished up elections, and so.
You didn't screw anything up, did you?
Pardon?
You didn't screw anything up, did you?
Well, depends on your perspective.
Go ahead. Do you want to add anything?
I don't have anything to add, just okay. That I'm very supportive of both of these bills that you're considering. Thank you for hearing them.
Either one of you want to say something?
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Polina. I'm a city council member in Stillwater, and it's kind of ironic. Last year I was here supporting the St. Croix River crossing. This year I'm here supporting a small trail over Manning Avenue, which is going to have a great impact on our community.
Tell me why it's ironic.
Well, it's going to change that we had both bridges have an impact on our community. We're trying to get the traffic out of downtown to make our town more pedestrian-friendly and tourist-friendly for people to come to Stillwater. And now we're bringing in tourists by bicycle to make our town tourist-friendly for our bicyclists to support our local businesses, our local bed and breakfast hotels and businesses.
Are your businesses okay with this?
They're very excited about it. Our Chamber of Commerce is very excited about having this trail come to town. We've put away money. Our community's put away money to do a downtown plan to make our town more bicycle friendly. We're looking at possibly, not only are we the birthplace of Minnesota, but hopefully we're going to be the bike capital of Minnesota in a few years with the amount of people coming to Stillwater to enjoy our community. And we've made a major investment in our infrastructure downtown. We've put a pedestrian plaza to tie into this trail. We've put restrooms into the trail. We've actually built parking areas. We're working closely with Washington County, the DNR, on tying all the planning for this trail together. So it's going to be a major benefit to our community. And the great thing about it is we're all working together for the end of trying to make something better for the residents of our area. So.
Senator Housley, would you like to join us at the table? Senator Osmick, while she's going up there, go ahead. You have a question.
I was just going to say, Mr. Chair, out in Lake Minnetonka, we put in a trail that I didn't think was going to be nearly as popular as it did. It's paved all the way out past into Carver County. There's now economic development that's actually occurring with restaurants going up around the trail because it's so popular, and our parking ramp, which we thought was going to be undersized, is actually right-sized now because of the fact that there's so many people with bikes coming down. And if you told me this 2 years before we did this, I wouldn't have believed you. I would have thought you were a Martian. But the reality of the situation is actually it has become incredibly popular and an economic benefit to our area.
See, and I never would have told you that because I wouldn't have believed it either.
We agree.
Senator Housley, do you need to make a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The businesses, representing also the business owners in Stillwater, being a business owner in Stillwater, and they really do support this to help bring commerce to our city. So it is, thanks for letting me come up here. But no, I thank you for hearing the bill, and thank you to Senator Sieben and Senator Kent.
We're an equal opportunity committee. have you introduced the same bill? Is that a similar one?
I think I'm on a similar one, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members, Senate File 180 is your bill.
Is mine?
There.
See, I'll be back.
Well, if it's the same bill, we don't need to hear it again. Okay, so as long as you're here, we'll know that we're doing the same thing. Just so you know, it just went down $500,000.
I know. I <didn't> love that scrap metal. Thank you.
Okay, does anybody else want to make any comments? Okay, any questions from the committee? Okay, thank you very much. And we'll lay over Senate File 519 for possible inclusion in the recommendation of the bonding committee. Senator Sparks, we have a Senate File number 200.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File 200 before you today. The bill that we have in front of you is a request for the restoration of Fountain Lake in Albert Lea, Minnesota. The project has strong support from our community. In your packets, you'll see many letters of support from the city, businesses, and community leaders. With us today, too, Mr. Chair and members, we have Susie Peterson, the Executive Director of the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Also, Randy Kerr, the Executive Director of the Albert Lea Freeborn Chamber of Commerce, and Laura Lundy with the Lake Foundation of Albert Lea. The state has already made significant investments in the water quality of Fountain Lake through the cleanup of the Edgewater dump site. The state has also approved a local option sales tax, which the voters overwhelmingly supported, that is targeted toward clean water. This is not a new project this year, members. The Senate Capital Investment Committee has toured the area, and we've had hearings in previous years. State funding for this project will benefit the state through increased tourism spending, strengthening the economy of southern Minnesota, and helping to attract businesses to the city of Albert Lea. With me today, Mr. Chair, I have the project manager of the Shell Rock Watershed District, Andy Henschel, and I think I'd like to turn over to him to discuss the project a little bit further.
Welcome, Mr. Henschel. Please say your name for the record.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Andy Henschel. I am the project manager for the Shell Rock River Watershed District. First thing I want to do is just give you a little background of Fountain Lake, what the pollution issues we have with the lake, what the district has done to this point to fix them, and how we feel that this project plays a key role in not only the district's goals, but the state's goals as well. So Fountain Lake is a 555-acre lake. It has a watershed tributary that flows into it of roughly 63,000 acres. Most of this is primary agricultural land. So some of the runoff that we see upstream of the watershed includes pollutants such as sediment and phosphorus. These are conveyed to the lake through natural streams, agricultural drainage ditches, and municipal stormwater. Historically, large deposits of not only sediment and phosphorus have hampered the lake water quality of Fountain Lake. Through comprehensive efforts that are underway by numerous groups over numerous period of years to improve Fountain Lake. So I want to just give you a background of what has been done to this point in the upper reaches of the watershed to control the sediment and phosphorus coming down. In 2001 and 2002, the agricultural community of Freeborn County and the Shell Rock River Watershed District was in the top 10 in the nation for CRP filter strip signups and waterways. What this means is with this program, we installed filter strips on 345 miles of drainage ditch, which is in the watershed district. We've also been working with partners like DNR and Bowser on projects such as RIM, WRP, and CREP to look at marginal lands and again to protect lands adjacent to our waterways. The district 5 years ago established a cost share program to retrofit open tile intakes and convert them to rock filters. To this point, we have retrofitted over 350 open tile intakes. Again, we've worked with our crop producers and our animal producers on developing manure management, grazing systems, installing sediment basins. Some of the other key factors that we've looked at is a multi-pronged approach, not only looking at sedimentation and how to prevent sedimentation into our system, but how to prevent the phosphorus coming into our system. We have roughly 22 lakes within the district. A lot of these are smaller lakes, real shallow, contribute huge amounts of phosphorus, basically due to rough fish. And so the district took a large management plan to control those rough fish and control and keep them out of the smaller lakes that they use as a nursery and recycle phosphorus into Fountain Lake and Albert Lee Lake. Along with this program, we've installed five barriers to reduce rough fish movement throughout the district. And with this, we are going to be doing in the process six lake reclamations to clean up also more water coming into Fountain Lake. We've also initiated many programs that look at stream and ditch restoration projects upstream. We've also worked with municipalities on flood control, stormwater, and encouraged the installation of rain gardens to slow runoff and to catch those pollutants. What I'm here to say is everything that we can be done to improve Fountain Lake water quality is being done or is in the process in future plans. The remaining source of this phosphorus of the lake is the internal loading from accumulated sediment. What we're finding out is that 65 to 70% of our internal loading of phosphorus is at the lake bottom, and it's been there, or it's accumulated over many years. So additional improvements need to meet state standards and reduce the internal sediment load. This project will remove approximately 1 million cubic yards of accumulated sediment. It's estimated to total cost of $15 million. Half this project will be funded through a local option sales tax. This project is ready to go this year, and it is a multi-year effort. The watershed has begun preliminary engineering for this project and is ready to move to final design, permitting, land acquisition, and sediment removal. With that, I'm done with my little rant and open for any questions you guys may have.
We've heard rants before. That wasn't a rant. Sir, I'm looking at this timeline thing here, and I see you got some electric fish barriers, and we're talking about doing those for invasive species. Is it working?
Absolutely, it's working.
Well, that's a good answer. Okay. All right. Senator Sparks, you have some other people with you. Does anybody want to say anything or want to feel like testifying? Or I don't want you to come up here for nothing. You know? The weather was bad and the roads were bad, I'd kick you out of here. But since everything's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Randy Kerr, KEHR, of the Albert Lee Fribourg County Chamber of Commerce. And as Senator Sparks pointed out, in your packet you have letters from our largest employer, Mayo Clinic Health System in Albert Lee and Austin. Our chamber board has for a number of years supported the watershed in all of their efforts as an economic driver in the community. I will tell you just a little side story that I provide tours for physician recruits for Mayo Clinic Health System in Albert Lee and Austin. City tours, community tours, they are all incredibly enamored with our lakes. And while the watershed has made great progress, we need to take that a further step because they're bringing families to town that want to have those recreational opportunities. We've built a walkway all the way around the lake. We even call ourselves the land between the lakes because we also have Albert Lee Lake. Fountain Lake is the heart of our community, and it drives all of the business. We're in the middle of doing, in the process of bidding a Broadway streetscape project that will focus on finishing at a park at the lake. All of these things tie together to really drive the economy of Albert Lee and Fribourg County. And we would definitely appreciate your support. Thank you.
And how big is the lake? So how how would the cleanup go? We do this on a barge? Is that what we would do, or how would this happen?
Yeah, you would use a barge, a device that would actually hydraulically remove the sediment and dispose of it in the proper methods.
What's Senjum's Lake? What's the name of it? Zumbro.
Lake Zumbro.
It's a similar. This is a similar project.
Yes, it would
be. Okay. All right. Okay. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, to that point, was this lake? Is it just runoff? Did you say that's in there, or was this lake years back ever used for a septic system for the city or sewer pond? And I asked that because my hometown has a lake that used to be the dumping pond for the sewage system. Anything like that's going on? And then second, if we take this out, how many years later do we have to do it again?
Ms. Trenchell.
Mr. Chair and Council, those are two great questions. As far as municipalities and sewage coming into the lake, there is none. What we have found, and this is another program that the district started 5 years ago, was our pollution prevention program. What this program looked at was all the individual houses in the rural area and made them do a compliance inspection on their on-site wastewater treatment system. What we found is we did have a very high number of them which were imminent health threats, or their sewage flowed directly to a ditch or stream that flowed into Fountain Lake. With this program, I can tell you today that we have installed over 400 new septic systems to take and basically remove that phosphorus load out of our system. That's some of the aggressive steps that our district has taken to reduce this. As far as your question of would we have to do this again 20 years from now, my answer to you is we'll never control every piece of sediment coming in to the lake. But I believe with all the programs that we've already implemented and all the projects that are being implemented to this point, we can implement that over a very long time period. One of the other interesting notes that we are working on in the design phase of the sediment removal of this lake is strategic locations of where our drainage systems come into the lake. And because we know we can't control all the sediment just due to Mother Nature and 12-inch rain events, what we're doing is looking at creating sediment traps and looking at ways to localize where those deposits of sediment will be within our system. And then we can easily remove those pocket areas through a management plan, whether it be every 12 or 15 years, but at a largely reduced cost, whether you can basically just using a backhoe and cleaning out like a stormwater pond.
Follow up.
Senator Westrom.
Two questions or quick questions. So how deep is the lake now with the sediment? How much deeper will it be? Does that improve it for fishing, swimming, boating activities, water skiing, that type of things? How much deeper are you making it? And second, going back to biology class 101, they taught about how lakes turn over every so many years, and I forget how many years that is, but is there a natural process that will occur with some of this phosphorus and it'll turn over and naturally cure itself somewhat if we did nothing?
Mr. Chair and Council, to address your first question about, and it's going to sound a little weird here, as far as depths and looking at what the depth contour or what we call prisms is going to be is really depending on our final engineering. We're not attacking this and looking at just going out there and making a bowl. We're looking at science and different ways to look at our phosphorus load. You know, we have sediment deposition in this lake. Every portion of that lake, the sediment levels are different as far as the amount of phosphorus. What we want to focus on are those areas where the phosphorus is the highest and remove those. So I can't give you a general depth of what it's going to be. Every area is going to be a little bit different as far as how much is removed.
So what is the current, on that point, Mr. Chair, what's the depth? I mean, what's it range from now? 8 feet to 28 feet or 2 feet or what? Generally, what's...
Mr. Chair and Council, right now the average depth of Fountain Lake is roughly 6.5, but it varies between 12 and 3 feet.
Okay. And the second part of the, is there any natural overturning of the lake that will occur anyways?
Mr. Chair and Council, a lake normally turns over every year. Every fall, a lake will turn over. Our lake, due to how shallow it is, does not turn over. It's a eutrophic lake. It doesn't have the characteristics of a deep lake, which creates a lake turnover. Our lakes are pretty much from top to bottom the same water temperature, and the water temperature is what creates a lake to turn over. And because we don't have that depth, our lakes don't turn over.
Senator Sparks, does anybody else want to say anything?
I think that's it, Mr. Chair.
Are they being shy or?
Yes.
Okay. Any? Oh no, we got one there. See, we.
I'm.
I knew we could get one of you up there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm not shy. I'm Laura Lundy with the Lakes Foundation of Albert Lea. This is an organization that I joined approximately 6 years ago now. It is an organization that has existed since 1934. Recognizing the need to preserve and restore prairie pothole lakes, and that is what our lake is. So it's very important that our community stays on board with this project, which I think our packet definitely presents that everybody's on board. And as our organization continues to explore how we can promote restoration, this project is the next project that needs to be completed.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for making the trip. Okay, we'll lay Senate File 200 over for possible inclusion and recommendation of the Bonding Committee. Senator Hur, Senate File number 311. Senator Hur, this is what happens when you're the vice chair of the committee. You get to go last.
Like they say, saving the best for last.
There you go. There you go.
And Mr. Chair and Senator, I'm honored to be on the proposing end of you, and looks like the view is quite good. I'm now knowing everybody looked very wonderful from this point of view.
Good start.
Thank you. What I have before you is Senate File 311. And Mr. Chair, Senate File 311 is a bill seeking appropriation of $3.5 million in the bonding funds to go to Metropolitan Council for a grant to the City of St. Paul to design, build, and equip cultural center at the Bruce Vento Nature Sanctuary. The City of St. Paul already purchased and managed the site of 27-acre property, which encompasses the Lakota Indian Sacred Ground and a former railroad yard, and also an existing four-story building of about 36,000 square feet. And this 27-acre site is located in the south portion of the Bruce Vento Regional Trail, which is between the eastern edge of St. Paul, close to Lower Town, and the Dayton Bluff neighborhood, which is home for many immigrants for over the years, and with wild range of ethnic groups and backgrounds. The city and a community-based nonprofit, namely the Lower Town Phelan Creek Project, are working to raise additional $2.5 million from foundation and individuals, and an additional $800,000 in federal grants fund for this project. This project and site is at the hub of several regional trails, including our state-owned Gateway Trail, and it's adjacent to the new Saint Stadium and only a few blocks from the eastern terminal of the Central Corridor Light Rail System. And I see that it is a project that will be an asset to the state, the region, and the community. And I can testify to that, to a certain degree, that being a cleanup guy in the neighborhood, I has been asked and invited to speak to Bus Lola High School student about conservation in the site as well. What I have here with me to talk in more detail is Mr. Dan McGinnis from Lower Town Phelan Creek Project, and also Mr. Mike Hans, director of St. Paul Park and Rec.
Who wants to go first?
Mr. McGinnis will go first.
Okay. Say your name for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Dan McGinnis. I'm the resident of the east side of St. Paul and have been on the steering committee of the Lower Phelan Creek Project for about 6 years and on the board of directors for 2 years. Lower Phelan Creek Project is an organization that was founded in 1997 as a partnership of neighborhood interest in the city of St. Paul. And our mission is to promote trail and green space connections and improve the ecological health of the east side of St. Paul and complete the redevelopment of the Bruce Vento Nature Sanctuary as a place to learn. And we like to say to celebrate three stories. One, the story of restoration, which is to honor and celebrate the significance of the Lakota-Dakota Indian sacred site and a site of cultural significance. This is the year of the Dakota in the state and in St. Paul, and on this site is Wakan Tipi, the sacred spiritual site of the Lakota. The second story is a story of immigration, and this is to honor the racial, cultural, and ethnic groups who have settled in the Lower Phelan Creek area and the adjacent neighborhoods such as Dayton's Bluff. And many of them made their home here more recently or in the past, ranging from European immigrants at the time when this city was founded all the way to more recently the Southeast Asian immigrants. But we also have immigrants in the neighborhood from Africa and South and Central America. Finally, the story of migration, to honor this place as a part of the Great Mississippi Flyway, which is recognized by the National Audubon Society as one of their official important bird areas. As the fact sheet before you shows, and you should all have a two-page fact sheet, state bonding funds are being requested, and they would augment $9 million in funds, which we've already spent for acquisition, remediation, and restoration of habitat on the site and connecting to the regional trail system. These funds that we're requesting would be used to support the creation of a cultural center on site to further interpret the cultural and natural heritage of the state and the region. The site is already being used by school groups, neighbors, and visitors to the city and region, and has been used by national groups meeting here as a model on how to take a former industrial site and restore it through joint public and private efforts. This request has been endorsed by the MEP, or Minnesota Environmental Partnership, as one of its bonding priorities. And the location of this site is at the hub of more than 100 miles of recreational trails, connecting to the north to the Bruce Vento Trail, on up to the State Gateway Trail, over to the St. Croix River. And if we get a bridge connection, which we're working on, over Shepherd Road and the railroad, it'll connect to the Sam Morgan Trail along the Mississippi and to points north and south. We believe the time is right to fund this project because we can coordinate its development with that of the new regional ballpark, the Central Corridor Light Rail, and the nationally recognized St. Paul Farmers Market and the Union Depot destination in Lower Town. We've recently completed a capital campaign feasibility study as recently as last month, and we're pleased to tell you that we've received strong indications from the focus groups made up of private foundations and the private donor community that we should be successful in augmenting our request to you with $2.5 million in private funds. And as Senator Herr indicated, we're also seeking $800 million in federal funds.
Thousand.
This project, when completed, will be a gathering place, a learning space, an event center, a trail hub, and a cultural and natural interpretive center with dramatic views of the Mississippi River and St. Paul. It will take full advantage of the on-site natural area that has already been restored to native habitat by student interns and community volunteers. The new cultural center at the Bruce Venter Nature Sanctuary will be an amenity for the state and the region, and we urge your support of this request. And now I'd like to introduce Mike Hom, who is the director of the St. Paul City Park and Recreation Department.
And Mr. Chair, I apologize to steal the mic before passing on to Mr. Hahn. I'd like to also acknowledge my co-author, Senator Scalzi, and Senator Wego, who's not here, but I just like to.
Why are they on it? Why are they on it? No, just kidding. Because, it counts against them, when we.
Mr. Hahn.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have much more to offer in substance, so I'll be just very brief. I can confirm that the city does, in fact, own the land and the building that we are speaking of here, and the project would advance the plans that the city has for this area, including in our comprehensive plan. So happy to be here and assist in answering any questions. So thank you for hearing it.
What does CPRP mean? After your name.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Ilholm, who was here before with Washington County, has similar initials, and they stand for Certified Park and Recreation Professional.
Oh, I love it.
I do, too.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, you're looking at about a $7 million project. Is that right?
Chair and Senator Westrom, that's correct. The existing building there is a 36,000 square foot, four-story building that we've done a detailed cost estimate of the building and an evaluation of it. It's a sound structure and could be rehabilitated and basically put into shape for use at the cost of about $7 million.
So, Mr. Chair, is that $7 million part of the city donating the building, or the building's on top of the $7 million, that $7 million is what it would take to renovate and restore and build a nature garden?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, yes, the city has already acquired the 27 acres around the property, the approximately 3 or 4 acres that go with the building and the building. That's already in public ownership.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, and to the witness, what will fund the operations of this? Will it stand on its own? And let me just tell you where I'm questioning this or coming from. I live in St. Paul 6 months out of the year, basically. You've got a lot of nice features and places to go now. I think Acoma Park being very well known statewide. They've got a nature conservancy there. This isn't that many miles away from Como Park. It's all within the city of St. Paul. Are you going to really have enough people coming through this to pay for the operations, or is the city going to subsidize this ongoing? What's the business plan look like?
Mr. McGinnis.
Chair and Senator Westrom, the model that we're currently using, if we choose to restore the building, is that the Interpretive and Cultural Center will actually comprise one floor of the four-story building. The other three floors will actually be rented out for revenue income for the that will help support the operation of the center. But there will clearly be some operating costs beyond that. But this model actually would rely on additional revenue coming in from rental of the space. And it is a city-owned building, and we, as the Lower Failing Creek Project, would enter into a long-term agreement with the city to occupy part of that space, but most of the space would actually be other like-minded organizations in the community who would like to reside in that setting and with each other.
So, Mr. Chair, the rented you would rent one floor of the four-story building from the city. Did I understand that right, or would the city be owning and operating this? And then, secondly, would the other business spaces and the other three floors be renting from the city as well?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, if I could defer to Mike Hom, because he's more familiar with the relationships that the city has in some of the other parks between the publicly owned structure and private occupants of the space.
Okay.
Mr. Hom.
Mr. Chair, committee members, it's a difficult question to answer with certainty because the exact program of the facility hasn't been determined yet by our partners. We wouldn't know precisely what's in the space, but presuming it would fall in line with what's proposed and similar to other parks and recreation facilities we have working with partners, the city would own the facility. There'd be a management contract or some sort of agreement created between ourselves and our, in this case, our nonprofit partner, and then expectations for covering the costs associated with the building would be laid out in that agreement, with the assumption at this time that the revenues from the facility are sufficient enough to operate and maintain the building. But that's more of a 20,000-foot description of what we anticipate would happen than what's in place right now, because we do not have a program determined or an agreement with the partner yet.
So, Mr. Chair, final on this point. Just, sir, what do you project for foot traffic? I assume you're going to charge some fee for coming through this, but I mean, to my first point, do you think there's enough demand, given you've got Como Park not that far away, you've got other venues like the Science Museum, Children's Museum, Historical Society, or the Historical Building, the James J. Hill House, and more than I'm even thinking of right now. I mean, how much traffic is there to capture?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we're in the process of evaluating that right now because there's kind of a new scenario that's emerging, and that is the fact that the new regional ballpark is right next door to this facility, within walking distance. That's going to create a whole other level of demand that we may not even have anticipated a year or two ago. It's also part of a trail hub with 100 miles of trail. So the incoming traffic will be from multiple purposes. It'll be from bike traffic. It'll be from school children who use the group program. It'll be from people who live in the neighborhood, Dayton's Bluff and Lower Town, who walk to the site. But the new figure is the fact that it's so close to the terminus of the light rail, which ends just two blocks away, the eastern edge. And it's immediately adjacent to the new regional ballpark site. So I'd be happy to get back to you with those numbers when we've got those developed.
All right. Thanks. Senator
Saxon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I end up being a witness for this whole project, too, because I've spent 11 years down at the Cosmopolitan, and I've seen quite an evolution in Lower Town in those 11 years. I was probably in the low-rent district when I started out, but it's no longer that way. Hundreds and hundreds of lofts and condominiums and apartments in renovated buildings. That was kind of the warehouse district. Burlington Northern had their offices down there. But it's completely changed. As you know, the Union Station just completed its renovation, and that's where the light rail will be going. The farmers market, as was stated, is very important. The ballpark will be right there. These will all be between a block and a half from where I live right now, so I don't know if I'll be able to afford it in another year. But But it's really the Bulldog, which is a pretty well known watering hole, is kitty corner from my apartment, and I'm right on Mears Park, and again, it's just blocks away from the Bruce Veno complex, and a lot of and those bike trails, and as I think there's very little question that that part of St. Paul, that being Lower Town, is now being developed in a big way, in a big residential way, and that will add much to this park system will add an amenity to Lower Town that's very important, but Lower Town will also add to the traffic out here. So I really think it's a good project for downtown St. Paul.
I don't think I've been in the Bulldog.
Tonight.
Maybe we'll have to have a tour. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you might enjoy this because this is truly some of the poorest immigrants that have come to this area, to the river and to St. Paul. If they didn't go up and do mining like yours did. But, I mean, this is an amazing immigrant place, especially when you start with the Indian Mounds, which was a huge Indian encampment, and then or Native American, sorry. And then where you see Swede Hollow Park there, that's where the Swedes came when they had no homes. They would build little kind of shanties, and there were outhouses. It was just really for the very poorest people that came to St. Paul. And then right to the left of that Swede Hollow Park was where the Italians came, and that's where my husband's family lived. And so when you have all these little immigrant places, and since then it's been Hispanic and Asian as well, we go back there all the time simply because that's where Grandma and Grandpa live. So were
the Germans on Tedesco Street?
The Germans were not in this area that I'm aware of. I could be wrong, but...
From what I learned a little bit about history, the German actually live on top of Dayton Bluff, and that's going by the name of, I believe, Dayton. Lyman Dayton, a real estate agent, was known for the name, what Dayton Bluff is referred to.
There you go.
And you were asking, you know, your prior question said, why are Senator Scalzi and we go sign up to the bill? My answer would be that because of our state bike trail, the Gateway Trail, lead on to Bruce Vento, respectable late Congressman Bruce Vento, who had the idea of bringing people together. And I think that will be the right destination where people are coming together from a different culture and different group. And even though the evaluation has not been concrete, there's a possibility for, you know, farmers market and other activity that align with the community there.
Okay. Any further comments or questions? All right. And thank you. Any last remarks? Okay, thank you. Then we'll lay over Senate File 311 for possible inclusion and recommendation to the bonding committee. So,
thank you, Senators,
members,
and Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you all very much. And if any of you have bonding projects and need a hearing and haven't asked for it yet, please do so. And if you can reduce the amount in your bills, please let us know so when we make the recommendation, we can tell how much it is. So thank you all, and meeting adjourned.